Hello, everyone. Hello. Welcome to Marvel Monday. We're going to switch things up. You can see he's in the Tiki Room studio, but he just wanted to take a bit of a night off. So Mark wanted me to drive the show a little bit tonight. How you doing, Mark?
Riding shotgun and loving every second of it, my friend.
I have my co-host from United We Fan. Our premiere episode of United We Fan Plus went off, I wouldn't say without a hitch, but it still had many hitches and still went off okay, don't you think, Marky Mark?
I think we definitely had some really great Mount Rushmores. Very catchy graphics. Yeah.
I'm afraid we do have James running tech tonight. So if he wasn't, I think Mark would have just thrown it in there at any moment in time. And then Ethan, fresh off of his trip to Walt Disney World, the Wolf of Main Street himself. How you doing, Ethan?
I'm very well. Thanks again, as always, for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to say that I got to meet the two guys of United We Fan while I was down there, which was really cool. They were both so gracious and kind to the wife and I while we were down there, and that meant it was just so cool just to meet up, and they went above and beyond. So I'm excited to be here, excited to be talking WandaVision with you guys.
We've got Brian in the comments channeling his inner Ebony Maw. Kind of freaks me out, to be 100% honest, but the wolf is here, the wolf is there, the wolf is everywhere.
I try to be.
So, gentlemen, I'm going to put this out there right now. As long as Mark allows me to stay in this studio and as long as a single person is there listening and talking to me about this show, I am in it for the long haul tonight. I have cleared my schedule. I love this show.
Don't drive angry.
Yeah, that's right.
So, all right, we'll let a few more people get in here. Yeah.
Hi, Alicia.
Alicia's here. Esther's here. Let us know what you thought of the episode. We know Amy and Dana just said they're still very much processing it. Oh, look at Han Solo himself.
That's right. Piano Rob's here.
Rob, I caught Corn Tunes for a little bit tonight. Rob was killing it with that set list tonight. The Beauty and the Beast near the end was wonderful.
That was I joked and said that was like my CD mix in my car, tonight's playlist.
Yeah, definitely.
That was my Napster playlist.
Oh, Napster. Wow.
Rip.
Mine was LimeWire. I don't know. I used that
more. I used LimeWire after Napster got sucked away from us.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Like
Mark's just enough older than me, though, that he was doing it at a very different point in life.
Dude, like, our young viewers even is LimeWire and Napster up there with Blockbuster? Is
that probably. Where that
is? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
My knees hurt talking about this. Oh, my God.
Oh, Alicia, yeah. So good. So good, Alicia. Well done. Stephanie asked if I have applied for the Star Wars Hotel Director. Disney's posted a job. If you have experience and you want to work at a Star Wars hotel, then that job is out there for you. I don't think that I qualify.
Brian, I hope they beam you up for that position.
Yes. Me too.
Can you remove him, please? Beam him. Beam me up. I'm not here for that talk. All right. Thank you so much, James. All right. We've got quite a few people in here now. Frankie, welcome. I hope Patrick's there with you too.
Hey, Dwayne.
So Dwayne's here. We need to get that picture changed, Dwayne. All right. Let's get into it, gentlemen.
Wow. Sebastian with the hot take right there. Did you see that?
I didn't.
No.
Yeah. Pull that one up again, James. Wow. Whoa. There we go.
All right, James or Sebastian, go. Give us reasons.
Yeah.
So let's start right there. Was this anybody's least favorite episode in this group? Was it anybody else's favorite? It was my favorite episode of the show we've gotten so far.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't my favorite. It wasn't my least favorite, but it definitely just found it somewhere in the middle.
I'll have it in the top four. I'll have top four.
So top 50th percentile, introducing your 2-year-old to Ragnarok. Keep him away from Jeff Goldblum. Everybody can watch a little Thor, as Mark calls it, Thor Fraggle Rock. Yes. So, all right, so my favorite episode, Mark's favorite episode, and then kind of top half for you guys. It was far more character driven. That's for sure. We got a lot of really MCU epic stuff. So, Mark, from This Is Life, what made it your favorite? Before we get into it too hard.
So, like Frankie Rosa just said, it was a character driven episode. that, so as a guy who just, I can appreciate a great performance more than anything else. Like I'm a sucker for special effects. I love a good epic battle, but this watching Elizabeth Olsen just act the living heck out of this episode, following her from Sokovia all the way to the Avengers compound to like that scene in the end where she has the deed. I mean, we're going to get into all of the specifics where she has the deed to the land with just, you know, a place to grow old, love V, and like that moment. There's a lot of jokes going around that like she's the hand model. She was flawless. If she doesn't get nominated for something, I'm just going to be furious. We talked about before the show started the Golden Globes, that if they snub this show because it's a Marvel show, if they snub her performance and Catherine Hahn's performance, I will be very upset, because the acting in this episode was far and away the best that it has been. This was definitely my favorite episode. I got choked up several times throughout the course of this episode. And even the children from Sokovia, that sequence where the bomb goes off right before the bomb hits, and the little girl is looking and the music is swelling and she's looking at her mom and dad. You could feel the love in the room at that moment, not having anything but a 30-second snippet of her life as a family, and seeing how quickly and violently that was ripped away. It just, like, I was like, wow, this is the most powerful episode that we've got. So right there, that was what did it for me, were those little moments that just were done with picture perfect emotional intelligence.
I knew the bomb was coming and it still scared the living crap out of me. Yeah, I think the good news for this show is it's going to compete in a limited series because it's likely not getting a season two. So I'm not worried about it getting snubbed. If The Mandalorian can be nominated for best drama in the Golden Globes, granted it didn't win, even though The Mandalorian's better than The Crown, fight me. But if The Mandalorian can get that recognition, I don't think WandaVision's going to have to put up with the "what have you done for me lately," because it's going to be a limited series. I think it'll be okay.
Brian, have you actually watched The Crown?
Yeah.
Have you? Oh, nope. There you go. Nope. You haven't watched it all. I haven't
finished it. It's boring.
No, you're boring. Anyways, no, you're not. That's not true.
Sure. So, you know, I think as sort of the average everyday viewer, there ended up being more questions in this episode than there ended up being sort of answers. And I felt like there should have been some answers, since this is a limited series, since we are heading into what is supposed to be the last episode. And I don't know if it's like the TikTok culture, like we've talked about, that has sort of played into this, or just our own, you know, not reservations, but our own sort of ideas sort of get ahead of us. But listen, the acting performances from, you know, both Agatha and Wanda were absolutely incredible. But for me, the person who continues to sort of surprise me is Paul, is Vision. He really has done a phenomenal job as, you know, just this really great actor. And I mentioned it before, but him back in The Knight's Tale was probably one of my favorite performances. And he once again, like, he's just proven that he's a great talent. He's got a great voice. And I think for this particular show, Wanda and he are so connected. And I think that's what I really, really enjoyed about, you know, this episode, was we got to see a little bit more of their relationship before it became this perfect world scenario. We saw how Vision was able to sort of bring Wanda down to Earth and help unwind a little bit and make her giggle and laugh. And for me, that was just like a really raw, really real moment that I really enjoyed. And it wasn't my favorite episode. I think the Halloween episode will continue to be my favorite for a long time. But you know, this one was, yeah, there you go. There it is. I like it. But otherwise, like, this was a really great episode, but it did leave me with a lot of questions.
So Sebastian is getting me fired up right now. Like, I'm very excited to get it. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. Wanda's family may not be the first to get hit in a bombing, no, but I mean, I knew it was coming because we've been told it since Avengers Age of Ultron. Mark, what did you think?
I think this show definitely needs to be thought about for production design awards and writing. I think the writing is very, very well written. I don't think Olsen deserves a nomination. I think Catherine Hahn and Paul Bettany, I will happily support them for acting nominations for their roles. This episode, the Avengers compound scene, I think is a scene that when you, the show's over, you'll remember that scene and go, oh my God, I just want to rewatch that scene so much. The scene with the family watching the old TV shows. I think there were just, for this episode, it just had a lot of memorable moments for me, and this is why this episode will stand out. And the other ones, the other episodes at times, like, yeah, they were special and unique in the beginning, but then they kind of felt like your typical Marvel Cinematic Universe formula. But this episode was a character-driven one, and you don't often get that with the bigger epics. I feel like the bigger blockbusters, for them to just have a moment of two characters sitting on a bed just having a heart-to-heart moment. And did anyone else just break down laughing when the Malcolm in the Middle clip, he just hammers on it and the whole thing collapses? I don't know. I thought it was hilarious.
It's funny because the man grievously injured himself.
But that scene alone, I can watch that scene over and over. I think it was a beautiful scene. And is the episode my favorite? Honestly, I'm not going to rank. I don't really want to rank them just yet. I want to finish the whole story, the whole catalog of the show. And then once everyone has stopped overanalyzing everything and I can go back and watch it and just enjoy it for the pure entertainment, then I think is when I'll be like, that was my favorite. That one was my favorite. That one isn't my favorite, but I feel like Brian would think that's the best episode. So I'll wait.
You used it being a typical MCU thing as a derogatory term just now, and I'm just
not
gonna,
at all.
I'm just gonna move past it. But
No. Well, here's the thing. It's like saying, you know, that's typical Pixar. That means typical greatness, just like typical MCU is typical greatness.
I don't know why Ethan got removed. He was being very nice. all right, gentlemen. Well, let's get into it then.
And we then opened number up, three.
We opened up the episode in Salem, Massachusetts, 1693. I did say in our very first episode of Marble Monday that the beer named June 2nd was a callback to the start of the Salem Witch Trials, and we totally went back to the Salem Witch Trials. Yep. That was quite the surprise. It seems to be mixed emotions in the comments of how people experience this episode. But let's start with Mark from United We Fan. Mark, how did you take this scene of being a witch on trial by other witches?
I liked that they flipped it. That you thought going into this that she was going to be burned at the stake by, you know, the town people or the common people. So I kind of liked the twist on this that it was the coven that said that she had learned magic above her station and her rank. I also like the dynamic of her pleading to her mother. I thought that was a genuine moment for her to really plead. And Sebastian said it before about the life force. Like here are the witches, you know, feeding her their life force and they wouldn't break it off. The way I took that scene was that they were unable to break at that point. It almost seemed, and I'd be interested to get both of your perspectives on this. It almost seemed like the power that came forth surprised Agatha a little bit in that moment, because she seems to be phased, at least initially, by their attacks, that it seems to be causing her a degree of pain and discomfort. And then she taps into something. It seems like it's like a subconscious thing that all of a sudden is tapped into, and then you can see the streams turn purple and she's locked all of those witches in, and then she drains all of their life. It was a really fascinating scene. We didn't get a lot of answers as to the why all of that happened. But again, as a person who didn't understand that moment, I appreciated it just on its face value. And I'm very much looking forward to those answers coming, if not this in the finale, in the Chthon villain.
Why did you go there already? You're already speculating, man. Like, you're already speculating.
Because you need that hot take, man. You need the fat. You need the fat Thor take. You got to break it. You got to break it out early. So that's my hot take. Chthon is coming, gentlemen.
Okay.
Purple power, right. Frankie. Purple power.
So Sebastian, and I mean this. I don't mean this in any disrespectful way at all. Sebastian's getting really hung up on what we weren't told in this particular scene. This is to give us a backstory on Agatha and the fact that Agatha has been studying magic and dark magic, and she's very capable and has been studying for hundreds of years, literally, and she still has never come across anything like Wanda. I think if we wanted to get far more into Agatha, we can do so at a later date. I think getting hung up on too much of who is Agatha or who is Agatha's coven and all that kind of stuff. I just don't know if it's worth visiting that this quickly in this show. I read it the same way you did, Mark, is she was getting tied up and she couldn't break the bonds of, or the other witches couldn't break those bonds. And I think her mother, Rob said coven mother, actual mother in the credits, for the show, the character has the same last name as Agatha. She has the same last name of Harkness. So I would say actual mother makes the most sense here, but it doesn't really matter. But I just think she thought she was more powerful than Agatha. So I think she thought she could take her down. She's got that blue crown on her head.
Yeah, Brian, can I ask you this really quick?
I don't know what it is, if that's what you're going to ask me.
No. I was going to say, like, in that moment, in her infinite wisdom, what do you think made the mother think that she, after witnessing that the display of power that she saw, what do you think made her think she could have any effect with a single blast at that point?
Arrogance.
Like, I yelled at the screen at that moment. I'm like, what are you doing? Didn't you just see what happened?
She's at least got to try, because if she doesn't try, then she's just going to be on the run anyway, and Agatha's going to keep going after her until she's dead anyway. That's how I read it. I think she knew she wasn't going to win, but I mean, she tried to go for the high ground and that didn't work either. So, Ethan, how did you experience this?
So this was very interesting. I was like, oh, Massachusetts, I know where that is. I've been there. So that was my immediate thought, but I got to agree with Sebastian in some sense, because it didn't answer a lot of the questions. But at the same time, I've sort of started to realize that, you know, Agatha plays a role within this, and most certainly she sort of has this command over everything that she does anyway. Like, we sort of knew that going into this. So for her, to just kind of be a little you can't affect me. I'm good. Like, I kind of knew that was coming. But it was certainly interesting. I would love to know maybe more, and maybe that's the opportunity there, is we're interested enough now. And I'm sure, I always say that there's somebody sitting at the round table saying, got him. And they're going to start, you know, thinking up an idea to put something else out for just Agatha that's going to make sense and make, you know, everything sort of come together. But I didn't necessarily need this scene. I was kind of like, all right, get me into what everything is going on, and we'll go from there. But it was interesting. Like I said, I was just excited they were in Massachusetts. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
So welcome to Marvel Monday. We're going to spend our entire time talking about this opening scene, and then you can join us on Marvel Tuesday tomorrow to break down the rest of it. Oh man, so much in the comments of Agatha saying she wanted to be good, didn't want her mother to kill her. Agatha got every single thing she wanted from this entire interaction, just like she did with Vision. The woman is an actress. She's been at it for hundreds of years. She said, I can be good, and she had legitimate sarcasm in her voice. She wanted them to push her. She wanted their life force. She got exactly what she wanted, just like she got from Vision a couple weeks ago during the Halloween episode. Mark from United We Fan, you look like you're pondering something.
I think I watched this scene very differently. There's heated debate right now about was that her real mom? Was that the Coven mom? And I didn't think that was a big takeaway from the scene. I was like, the emotion the two had, I was like, that's got to be her mom. And then you said the credits. I was like, okay, that's her mom. And then everyone is like debating, was she good? Was she trying to be good? Mm-hmm. I read the scene as she needed the last little piece unlocked for her to have unlimited power. And she got it once all the witches threw their purple little magic whips on her. And
They were blue.
Mm-hmm. So once they did their little zappy zap zip zip and she absorbed it all, I honestly don't think she wanted to kill her mom, because it wasn't right away. Her mom like had to come back for one more attempt, and that's when Agatha said, okay, yep, mom, if this is how you're gonna play it, I've got to finish you off.
I hope Derek's kidding.
I think the mom knew her daughter knew that she couldn't have too much power and what would happen. So I guess I'm a little confused about how I thought this scene was very straightforward. I think it definitely added backstory to Agatha. It wasn't too long, wasn't over the top, wasn't forced, felt very, I mean, I always say you could start it off with skip that scene. Where do we start? All right, we're back in the dungeon. All right, we don't really know like how evil Agatha is. Now we know that she took out her whole coven, took out her mom, what she's willing to do to get unlimited power. So that scene just showed a lot of who she was, and I thought was very vital. When you take out your mom, you know, it says a lot about her.
If nothing else, take from this scene, she's been seeing these things for hundreds and hundreds of years, and she still never came across anything like Wanda. I mean, just want to take the one thing from this scene, that's what it's there for.
I don't want to harp. We have a lot of episodes to cover, and I don't want to harp too much on this opening scene. But my takeaway is, just like Mark said, she got a taste for power. And then I think that the rest of the time that we haven't seen her for the rest of these hundreds of years have been a quest to fulfill that desire for the ultimate power. That's why Wanda unlocks that for her.
Yes, Rob.
Phenomenal cosmic powers. All right. Let's I don't want to move on, but I want to.
Moving on.
Okay. What's happening in Agatha's cave? Ethan, how did you experience this?
All right, so I just had to start putting some pieces together. You know, Agatha, to me, sort of, it's almost like she has an off-on switch to what's going on. And the way that I took it was, Agatha has been studying how to be a witch, how to understands the spells, understands, you know, has the books and these leather-bound books, and then knows how to do all these things.
The secret Jedi texts.
Right. And Wanda doesn't necessarily, I guess I just sort of felt like Wanda doesn't necessarily understand that yet, or hasn't been training enough or training long enough to get that. So when Agatha hits her with just some like rudimentary stuff, it just sort of seems to hit Wanda like, I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong in thinking that. I always feel really silly when I talk about what my thoughts were, because I'm sure you guys are listening to me like, oh wow, he's off in left field somewhere picking dandelions. But that was my immediate take was, all right, so here's this woman who's been around since 1693. She's been doing her thing probably long before that. And she knows a thing or two. And here we have Wanda, who's only been around for a few years and still learning the true depths. Like we've talked about, really learning the true depths of her power. So to me, that's how I took this exchange. And as soon as Agatha sort of scrolled her up and had her in the bound and was like, no, we need to get to the bottom of how you're doing this, because Agatha has found out that Wanda is doing something that even Agatha doesn't understand. And now all of a sudden where she wants to learn how to do it. So yep. Yes, I mean, sure. Is Wanda going to be there? I mean,
so there is the line of these are runes, Wanda. Only the witch who casts the spells can perform magic here. So I mean, I think that's going to be Agatha's downfall next week. I think Wanda's going to learn how to cast some sort of runes, whether it's on the entire hex in general or whether it's in a room. I think she's going to be able to lure Agatha in somewhere. And yeah, you nailed that one. Like Wanda is, she doesn't know what she's doing. She created this entire thing. She doesn't know what she's doing. And that's why Agatha gets so threatened by her and why she changes her tune at the end of the episode.
Right. And here's the other thing. And as someone who's still, Rob hits it, like, seems Wanda was born a witch. I was under the impression throughout this entire, like going into this, that Wanda became a witch, not that she was born one. So right. To me, that's really interesting too. So she was still waiting for her Hogwarts letter and it never came. And now we're suddenly moving into Agatha needs to teach her a thing or two.
So you're not wrong in thinking the Mind Stone is what caused that, because that's every indication we've had. It's, I don't know if retcon's quite the right word, but we're now getting the full story that we all took it at face value that bomb never went off. Mm. Now we're learning why that bomb never went off. Thanks, Marky sense. Mark, what'd you think of Agatha's cave? I know you want it as your man cave.
There's something relaxing about it and I feel protected and safe in it. So I don't know. okay. It's no cave of wonders. I still can't get over that cute little fluffy bunny eating the bird.
It changed into the cicada right before.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah. He ate just the bug. It's a little bit better. I mean, they did rule out that bug was Tommy early on, so that's good.
Yeah, that's true. The cave. I don't know. I didn't think about this scene too much. I thought about more of the characters in it. I didn't think about her cave. The book, I like the one fan theory that it's the book missing from the Wise Ones library where Doctor Strange trained. But yeah, I don't have too much on the cave.
Mark, what do you think?
It's not my favorite cave. I think that still belongs to another superhero.
I had to piggyback off that. I also didn't give the cave much thought, and it also, Mark, you're spot on. It's not my favorite
scene in general, though. It doesn't have to be just the cave.
It's not my favorite cave, but it's sort of, as far as like a den of instruction goes, it certainly runs a distant second to Christian Grey's closet of education.
Man, Freudian slip there. Holy cow.
We've now entered the red room of this.
Yes, we're in the red
room. That's why he's wearing that shirt.
50 shades of Agatha.
Mark murmured on this Diz Life.
That's kind of how I took the cave, to be honest with you. That as off-putting as that may be to some of you, it was 50 shades of Agatha in that cave. That's what it was meant to do. It was to educate Wanda, to whip her into shape, figuratively. Or to get thrown against the wall once or twice to get roughed up, you know, because that's how Agatha rolls. She just gets a little rough.
My children are on the other side of that wall watching this episode.
but that cave served the purpose of taking Wanda through. Now we know what the commercials meant. They were not the Mind Stones. They were not all of the things that TikTokers have been speculating. Yeah. Every single one of those commercials represented a period of trauma in her life that they were encoded. And then we got to see them again in sequential order from the toaster onward. So now we know when you go back and look at the commercials, what they actually were. But that den served the purpose for Agatha to find out the fullness of the story and to see just how, I want to say, how active Wanda has been in the development of her power. I'm afraid to step into the tiki room now.
So, okay.
Yes, Jared. Thank you, Jared.
Everybody is, man, the hate for this episode is killing me. Okay. If you've been watching Marvel Monday, we told you all along what the commercials were. I am having a hard time breaking down this week's commercial. You guys saw the commercial this week, right? That Buick commercial for like those last like 5 minutes of the episode, just a Buick commercial.
Was that a commercial?
It sure seemed like it. But anyway,
it did. It was very much.
It was. It was very Buicky. But anyway, I just Catherine Hahn, and this is why I love the opening episode too. The more it's for the children, yeah. The more we get of Catherine Hahn as Agatha Harkness, I'm all about it. I think she looked great. They de-aged her, did a much better job than they did with Luke Skywalker. Lucasfilm needs to start borrowing from Wait, Marvel when Studios did they de-age there. Her? She's much younger in the Salem Mass stuff. Like,
do we know that for a fact that they use aging technology?
Yes.
Really?
Okay.
Yes. They said it was a special effect. So they did de-age her using computers. Not a ton, which is what helps, but she looked great. I love Catherine Hahn. So but the way she's able to portray her frustration in this moment, not only with Ethan, is that your wife? She always has problems getting her a name on there.
I'm not sure.
The way she's able to portray her frustration, not only with the entire situation, the sitcom episodes, she says, I came here. So we know she didn't ever meet Wanda in the past. She came here because she followed the evidence of such powerful magic at one time, but she's frustrated with the sitcom episode or all that kind of stuff. And she's now, how did you do it? How did you do it? You didn't even tell Pietro, which how did we never put together the name Pietro? Like fake Pietro, it was right in front of us and we never called him Pietro. Like that really bums me out. But I just, the way she acts this scene, I'm very, very disappointed that Mark says Elizabeth Olsen doesn't deserve an Emmy. But we're gonna move on. Not from this particular sequence, but just the entire show.
And I feel the need to also clarify, not this Mark. Marky Mark.
I think she gives a really good performance. Will I be mad if she gets nominated? No, but I think the front runners would be Agatha and Wanda, or no, Agatha and Vision. I think they're the ones who I think are the...
Okay, well, we have actor in a lead role, actress in a supporting role, actress in a leading role. Can't we win all three here? Come on.
Can you? Yeah. Will it happen? No. And the Emmy nominations come out, we'll have a fun chat then about it.
Schitt's Creek would beg to differ.
Schitt's Creek.
Snooper's going to snoop.
So... how do you explain the cape being there? I mean, Agatha has a lot of powers, and Agatha needs a place to practice her magic. I've said this a couple times, Sebastian. By no means do I mean any disrespect, but I can tell that I'm not going to be able to turn you around too much on this particular episode. You've got passions going the other way, and I love it. I love seeing the other side of it. Let's move on to more what Sebastian's arguing is. Does Agatha have any righteous intentions? What does she want with Agatha? Or excuse me, what does Agatha want with Wanda? Mark, from this Diz Life, what do you think there?
I, to connect it to the opening scene again, sorry to go back to the beginning again, but I think that she had a taste of that dark power. She's studying magic that is beyond her station. Wanda is the key to her unlocking greater power. For something that, again, we just don't know. I don't want to be one of those guys on TikTok and speculate what it is, even though it is Chthon. But she's clearly trying to unlock something that is going to require Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness to suss out.
Or it was Agatha all along. Marky Mark, what do you think? Does she have any righteous intentions? Is Agatha worth saving?
No.
Fair enough.
I guess I just Agatha wants to be the baddest witch of all. I said that very carefully and slowly, and I guess this just was never a question for me. She really has no saving grace when it comes to Wanda. She just wants to reach that. She wants to power up, level up, and she's on her way trying to get it. Mark, that was a good point. Her trying to go above her station, maybe her skill set. She's trying to prove that she can be a, I don't want to say Jedi Master, but whatever that level is for witchcraft. She's not going to be a
Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, Mark, I think of the plot point from the first Doctor Strange, where the disciples of Dormammu sought Dormammu to have ultimate power, but they weren't smart enough to realize that it was going to be their demise.
Right.
I see a very similar storyline that when people deal with this dark dimension, they think it's a gateway to greater power for them, not realizing what it's unlocking. And I think I see Agatha very much like that. That's what I saw.
Do you think in order to defeat Agatha, Wanda is going to have to go to a dark place, and when there's no avoiding it, and when we get Doctor Strange, we're going to have to deal with her, the Wanda who had to go to the dark place in order to conquer Agatha?
I think it's
the opposite. I think it's Elsa style of love all along, like more fighting for the right things and overcoming her darkness and harnessing her power. Her power isn't inherently evil. It's just a matter of harnessing it.
I could see the writing going either way. I could see Agatha using everything to teach and tutor her, much like she is in the books, to unlock greater power for herself. I think it's going to ultimately depend on what happens in the finale too, and how she deals with the inevitable loss again of Vision, which she's going to have to come to terms with again.
Jennifer, we're gonna get there. Sebastian just put up a comment in that said that Agatha said she discovered this cave, that it was under her house all along. That's not something that I remember at all. Sebastian, I would love if you could give me the timestamp of that reference. I think it's Agatha's cave and she created it. I don't think it was anything that she just happened to come across. I think it's Agatha's cave.
She had a great general contractor kind of whip that up.
What is interesting is Agatha's house is there when Wanda pulls into Westview at the end. I found that kind of curious. But anyway, Ethan, what do you think? Do you think Agatha's worth saving at all?
I don't know if she's necessarily worth saving, but I do think in order for Wanda's character to continue, you know, developing into even more powerful, I do think that there's got to be some type of connection there, one or the other. I almost feel like one can't live without the other, or vice versa. It's going to be this moment where something will have to happen, which will tear one down or tear them both down. I don't know.
I'll give you a small hint. One of them might make it out of the show. One of them definitely will make it out of the show.
Yeah. That's probably the best way to look at it, I think. And I've started to enjoy Agatha, but I guess from my standpoint, I just can't tell if whether or not she's really deep down good, but fears Wanda, and that's why she's threatening the kids and things of that nature, which we'll get into, or if she's just trying to level up her own self. So it's definitely interesting.
Yes, Brian. Yes.
So I think to answer this question, what does she want with Wanda? She wants to learn Wanda's power, and she wants that power. I think it's that simple. I don't believe there to be a ton of righteous intentions at this point. Now, at the end of Avengers, you wouldn't say Loki's really worth saving either. And even after Thor the Dark World, when you think Loki's dead, he's not really worth saving. But they were able to concoct a storyline where Loki kind of came around and all that kind of stuff. Within the concept of WandaVision, Agatha's beyond saving. I mean, I know, and a lot of people get hung up on the comic books and who Agatha is in the comic books, is she's very much a mentor to Wanda, and she kind of does have her own righteous intentions in those certain circumstances. Marvel Studios only uses the comic books as inspiration. They do not have to make Agatha who she is in the comic books. By any stretch of the imagination, they can do absolutely anything they want.
And
if anybody holds my children by the neck like that, you're beyond, like, you, if this episode can be 90 minutes and you've built up this legend of a power hungry witch over these last two episodes, she's not worth saving. And now if you leave her alive and we spend more time with Agatha, please keep giving me Catherine Hahn in the MCU. But it's a disservice to this show. Chthon, Mephisto, get it out of here, man. Like, it is Agatha. It was Agatha all along. Now, that book all that kind of stuff. Whatever happens in the post-credit scene, there could be another influence here, but this main villain in this episode or in this show is Agatha, and it's a disservice to the show if it's anything else. That's how I see it. Hmm. Mark, you had something?
Oh, you scared me first when you started talking about strangling your children. I was like, oh God, scary Brian.
Don't strangle my children, man.
I know. I was going to say, just remember, the MCU can do whatever they want. The Skrulls, they changed that a good bit. And then even Star-Lord's dad with Ego and the comic book's very different. So it's a guiding, it's, what does Barbossa say? They're more of guidelines. So, yeah.
There was a comment about China. Can you bring that back up, James? I don't. I know that there's, I can't remember the name of the YouTube channel. It's a really well-watched YouTube channel. All of a sudden now they're Mephisto, no demons, no nothing like that. The only two issues I would have with that is one, that would have been the case all along. So why were we so speculative about Mephisto until we got seven episodes in to now change our minds on it? And two, Disney Plus isn't in China. So I don't think you're going to market to something that has no, eventually Disney Plus will make it to China. I think that is a valid thing, especially with Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. We didn't get we didn't get the Force Ghost scene with all those extra Force Ghosts because China and their rules with portraying spirits. And that's why Ghost Luke Skywalker looks so alive. But I'm not a cultural authority by any stretch of the imagination, but the simple fact is China doesn't have Disney Plus, so I don't think they're making decisions based upon what a country that can't even consume the product yet.
And lest we forget that China is also very strict about what content they allow, which is another thing that I think will delay Disney Plus there. It's not the catalog is not going to be anything like it is in the United States. China is very strict with what kind of content they allow the people to consume in that country. So,
All right, let's move on to our next question. Keep going, James. Okay, so she plucks a hair out of Wanda's head, does the exact same thing that Doctor Strange does with Thor's hair in Thor Ragnarok, and opens a portal to another dimension. We go back to Sokovia, 1999. 10-year-old Wanda and Agatha complaining about how loud Pietro is. Like, that was amazing to me. We talked about it already. The child actors, this show has knocked it out of the park with child actors. It's really hard to find ones, especially my co-host Mark from United We Fan. Child actors can get on his nerves really quickly. Have we gotten there in this show, Mark?
There are so many easy acting faults that could have happened that have happened on other shows. This show is not making any of those mistakes. I haven't eye rolled once. I haven't gone, ugh. I mean, the same kid, one of Wanda's children, he's in one of her child. He's on Haunting in Hill House. He makes me want to throw stuff through the wall. But in this
Julian show, Hillard. Yeah, Julian Hillard. That's Billy.
If you've seen the show, it's the scene where they're running out of the house and he's in the car and he like has this scream crying that just nails on chalkboard. But anyways, no annoying children actors in this one. No children were hurt in the making of this show by Mark from United We Fan.
I want to call out Michaela Russell. She played young Wanda in this scene, and she was absolutely incredible. Stephanie, don't think too much about it. Let's call it 2000 then. It definitely is a continuity thing, something I'm willing to overlook.
yes, Frankie.
But Mark will absorb, yeah. Ethan, what did you think of young Wanda specifically? How did you take this in?
So I thought it was very picturesque. Like, there was this big fight going on the outside, and you had a mom and dad who were just simply trying to entertain their kids. And I really resonated with that because I think that that's what every parent tries to do, is just simply keep the peace between brother and sister, keep the peace between what's happening on the outside in the world, and just keep everything light and fluffy. And, you know, you could tell they were... I mean, these people were poor. They were selling DVDs that were old, and You know, they were
or doing, new in the case of Malcolm in the Middle, probably.
Sure, exactly. But they were doing their best to do whatever they could to survive, and in a very war driven country. And for me, that really stuck out. I think for me, a lot of people are talking about the scene that we're going to talk about in a little bit. But for me, this was the moment that, you know, I got to see sort of how they were brought up, and their parents loved them and cared about them, and really, really just genuine, like the whole covering of the eyes and how that was a, you know, sort of a thing that to me, you know, just sort of really resonated. It was really, there were cute moments. There were really scary moments, obviously too, but you know, it was a true family just trying to do what they could to survive and live and love. And that to me really stuck out.
Sebastian, that was
James, bring that comment by Sebastian back up. Sebastian's issue is, why is Wanda making them live in sitcoms? The writers, her dad sells DVDs. That's not what it is at all, man. Like, if I had chaos magic and I had the ability to create a world like this, there would be Death Stars, X-Wings, Iron Man, like. Yeah. This is her emotional escape. Yep. You could see the war outside of her window, and this was her emotional escape. And Michaela Russell, the actress, you could see the joy on her face of the Dick Van Dyke Show and enjoying this time with her family. Yep. It is it's an emotional connection. It's not because her dad sold DVDs. It's an emotional connection, and it's her and Ethan, you said, talking about, before I forget, I'm sorry, you talked about how they do this to entertain their children. This is how they educate their children. They are getting their children to learn English so they can get out of Sokovia. And that's a big deal. This is a picturesque life for Wanda. And it's such a big deal.
And not only that, but the sitcoms were like, that is what every family thought would happen to them. That's what they wanted and cared about. So, you know, this was to me, and I know this is going to maybe scratch some heads, but this to me was more of an emotional scene than the one over at the Avengers campus. This to me was just so picturesque. It was the classic, you know, just wanting to live that American dream almost. I really enjoyed it.
Mark, what do you think?
Listen, there was just the perfect juxtaposition of the idyllic television life. And Ethan, Ethan, like, I preach, you were spitting hot fire for everything that you just said. It's not because her dad sold DVDs. This was the last happy moment that they had. And these were the happy moments that they had. They juxtaposed the happiness of the sitcoms and the happiness and the warmth that is inside of that household with the chaos that the mother bears witness to on the outside. And then when the bomb penetrated at that bubble, that world, that's it. From then on, think that just as a life-changing moment for Wanda. She knew happiness and love and togetherness, all encapsulated in those television shows that they watched in a nightly ritual. And even the music and the way that they framed those old episodes, it was done to show you how picture perfect that life was that the family of four shared. And then it shattered in an instant. Like, we're jarred when the bomb hits and it just fades to black and there's a bang. From then on, Wanda knew nothing but loss and sadness. And then in the subsequent scenes, we're subjected to, I mean, and we'll get to when she's going through Hydra, the pain that she has to endure. And then they say, don't worry, you've done it all before. Or the loss of her brother. And this is the only happy sequence that we really see, save for that one tender moment that she shares with Vision again. And then we know that that's the start of a healing for her. And then she loses him too. And like, she can't cope with the grief of that. I was floored.
Think about what this show has been for us. Think about when The Mandalorian came out in October. We had just gone through a pandemic. Life had been hell forever. We wanted new content. We wanted our form of escapism. The Mandalorian came out. WandaVision has come out. It's our form of escapism. And it's just, and if that doesn't land with somebody, then I'm genuinely sorry. Like, I wish it had landed. I wish you were able to see the writer's intentions, because it's a powerful, powerful scene.
Listen, Sebastian, too. I understand. So Sebastian is just pointing out the convenience of the writing in that matter.
But right.
For people who are impoverished, they do very much try to make their way in Eastern Europe, selling Western wares like that. That's a reality in some of these economically disadvantaged places, that the sale of Western goods and Western products on the streets, on a black market, if you will, is rooted in reality. So that is, it's very much rooted in what a family who's just trying to scrap together and make every cent in a war-torn country. It there's a touch of realism there. And even within this country, the economically disadvantaged, you see it in urban environments of people who are on the streets trying to grind and trying to hustle, whether they're selling, you know, knockoff products, or they're trying to sell you bootleg copies of movies that are not out yet. I mean, you very much see that, like, that's a reality. So for me, growing up so close to New York City and kind of experiencing that on the streets of New York City itself, it wasn't lost on me. I was like, you know, this is as real as it gets for someone who's trying to break the cycle of poverty or just get out.
I was not kidding when I said I will stay here as long as Mark will have me and as long as people are watching. Like, genuinely, we're gonna keep going, guys. So
yeah, keep
them
coming.
If you get bored, let us know. But yeah, we're gonna keep going.
They're killing it in the comments tonight, though. I have to, like, really tell you, like, I'm enjoying the comments tonight.
As am I.
I feel genuinely bad that I keep going after Sebastian. Again, Sebastian, please don't take offense. I really enjoy the conversation. So let's bring it up. The M word, mutant. I want to say, first and foremost, it's silly to say, but I really wish Disney had not purchased Fox at this point. I wish the X-Men and the Fantastic Four weren't on the table, because if that was the case, this show would be 100% exactly the same and the conversation would be a million times different. But it's on the table. Are they exploring Wanda as a mutant, or are they exploring Wanda as a witch, or a little bit of both? So we're going to talk about how the bomb doesn't go off. Let's start with Mark from This Diz Life again. Mark, how did you experience that bomb?
I took it on face value, exactly as Agatha said, that she cast a random hex. And again, that gets
probability hex.
Hex, which connects to what I think has been Agatha's thesis all along, that she's going through this exercise to try to see for herself that this is chaos magic. That last line is not done by accident. She's shown
I'm
now.
I'm trying to remember who uttered chaos magic in week one of Marvel Monday. Oh, right. Yeah, it was you.
It was me. She has been trying to prove all along that what Wanda has done is cultivate chaos magic. So
I don't know if I agree with that statement.
Well, I took it very much on face value. But like she even but Brian, to the point too, she even says, I've been so patient with you. Mm-hmm. So now she lost her patience. She says flat out, I've lost my patience. I've tried to allow you to come to this realization all along. I have, like, coddled you. I've allowed you to play this fantasy. You are a being with infinite power, and you're making breakfast for dinner.
Well, no. But she says that after she finds out she never took Vision's body and what Wanda's capable of. I think Wanda or Agatha doesn't know about chaos magic at this point. She just wants to know how powerful Wanda is. I think that scene when we get Vision, and we're going to talk about it, that's when it clicks, and that's when Agatha flips from trying to get Wanda to remember how she did it and then gets threatened by how she did it, because she at that moment learned how powerful Wanda is and she didn't know it the whole time. Mark, United We Fan, what did you think about the bomb? It's pretty surprising. Like, we've been told for 6 years since Ultron came out that the bomb just never went off. Now we find out that Wanda had something to do with it.
You know, you get a front row seat right there to show that Stark Tech was right there. Like, I don't know if the episodes finally wore me down, but I had a, like, hankering to watch Age of Ultron, and I think it was because of the credits always suggesting it. So I watched it, and you just see her hatred, both of their hatred towards Tony, and you go, I wish at the time we could have seen why. Why do you hate Tony so much? And I think having one of his bombs in your living room, just ripping your family apart, it really puts in perspective that look she's giving him and why they're okay with destroying the Avengers. So
they told it, they told us in Ultron, but seeing it's a whole different,
yeah, just, for sure. That's just it. A line. You're like, okay, yeah, another person, but seeing this little girl, this innocent little girl who just got done working on her English, laughing, wanting this American sitcom fantasy, just, oh, look, there's life is perfect. Nope. Stark Tech right there. Boom. Blows everything up.
Going back to the sitcoms, they really linger on what is shenanigans. And they talk about shenanigans or problems that aren't actually problems, that they don't really matter. And that calls all the way back to episode one. She could have snapped her fingers and had dinner done. It would have been fine. But she loved the sitcom shenanigans. I apologize, children.
Well, Derek agrees with you. The first two episodes are that.
Yeah,
Derek from Satisfactual Side Company.
Anyway, yes, no. But she could have snapped her fingers, and dinner would have been done. But she loves the sitcom shenanigans, the problem that's not a problem, and it eventually all turns out in the end. So somebody said, did she keep the TV on? I guess she could have, but she talks to herself of when it's all over, it was all a dream, it wasn't real, and then Pietro says, don't, which tells me this isn't the first time Wanda has done something magical. And I think Pietro was worried she was going to set the bomb off.
Did anybody else like that line from Agatha when she's like, a bomb blew up your family and then you joined it wasn't a terrorist group. What did she say?
She says terrorist group, I can't remember the exact line, but yeah. But
that line was just so good from Agatha. And, you know, Wanda's just like, we were trying to change the world. It's an interesting look at what you justify or what you need to justify something.
Let's move on to that then. We're talking Hydra. Wolf, how did you experience that Hydra facility? It's very loaded. So if you don't know, like, don't be afraid.
Well, yeah, and here was my gut reaction was I thought of it from like an editing standpoint, because you have that moment where, you know, the guys are sort of looking at it like they're trying to figure out what happened, and you just sort of see her enter the room and then she falls down, and they're like, all right, well, what happened in between there? Why did that happen? And I was sort of in the same boat, because they bring you sort of into the room at, you know, and you sort of have this third world perspective, third eye perspective from Wanda's, you know, she sees the stone and all these things. But it was definitely strange, because again, you didn't see that on sort of the other side, and it was different. But I guess that's maybe the best thing to say. It was different. I didn't really know what to take from it, other than this was the moment that I would have thought that her powers came to be, but maybe because of her abilities prior, this was sort of, you know, sort of opening up this other eventual possibilities, maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Agatha says a young witch comes in contact with an Infinity Stone and it enhanced what otherwise would have died on the vine.
Yeah.
Assuming Agatha's correct in that assumption, I think that Mind Stone, what I find interesting, and I've been reading way too much into it, is when that Mind Stone explodes, you get that big flash of yellow light and you actually see from behind the scientists, and they cover their eyes because of the glare. But then when they watch the tape, it doesn't seem like they experienced it. So I'm curious. I really do see that as more of an oversight from a filming standpoint, because I don't think the scientists even saw it. I don't think there's any way they could have, and have the scepter still exist in its manner in which it exists. She sees something very, very interesting in that Mind Stone. But I want to get Mark from This Diz Life's perspective on this
Hydra facility. I was just gonna say, could we go to that picture, because that was the most interesting moment.
James, if you could pull up that picture for us.
Yeah, that moment was easily the most interesting moment for me, when she gets, no pun intended, a vision of herself as the Scarlet Witch. Like, she sees into that Mind Stone, and she can see what she is destined to become at that point. For me, that was the foreshadowing of, I think, not next week, but I think of what we are bound to see in Doctor Strange. Like, that was the most lasting image for me from this episode of us seeing her in all her in all her power at that moment.
Was that just a quick glimpse? Like, because I must have missed that. Was that quick?
It was a couple of seconds.
It's okay. A couple seconds. You can even see the reflection in her eyeballs. They definitely linger on it for a little bit. I'm going to really read into this. Is she says that costume for Halloween was a Sokovian fortune teller. I just think she's Sokovian and she's seen her future, calling herself the Sokovian fortune teller. I think that's what she based her costume off of. Not that it matters, but still, I think it's cool. Mark, we've seen promotional footage of the costume in like a television, like up here on Wanda. I would be shocked if we didn't get her new costume in this show. So, let's go on to the next question, James. So the Mind Stone, why did it reveal itself? I just think it could feel that power that Wanda had. I don't think it's much more than that. Does anybody disagree with that?
No, I that's exactly how I read it, that the Mind Stone felt her power, it felt her potential, and it realized that in that moment.
Rob put up a comment, said, did she recreate the Mind Stone for Vision to live in this reality? I don't think so. That's a lot to ask for her, though she created vibranium. So, I mean, the only thing that tells me no is that Vision got outside the hex and was falling apart. That's the only... But, I mean, they're going to answer the question because Jimmy Woo even said it. How did she do it with it, bring him back without the Mind Stone? Like, they're even educating people who don't exactly know what's going on. I think they're going to answer that question, and I'm afraid of what the answer is. Let's move on to the next question, please, James. Oh, the one we've been waiting for. Can I go first?
Yeah.
Okay. This scene is so incredible. From getting Paul Bettany... being able to revert from what he's been, that sitcom Paul Bettany this entire time. He's been good in what he does. At the same time, he can fall right back into who Vision was in Captain America Civil War at the Avengers compound when Wanda says it's the first home that we shared together. He comes through the wall, which is a callback to Captain America Civil War saying, we talked about this. You can't be walking through walls, but just all of it and being capitalized with what is grief, if not love persevering. The writing for this entire scene, the emotion of this entire scene will, like Mark said it earlier, it's going to live forever. It's going to be the scene that I remember. Mark from United We Fan, how did you experience the Avengers compound scene?
I liked seeing an older version of Vision. I'm sorry. I just jumped
in. No, go ahead, Mark. Buddy. Keep going, Mark.
I like seeing an older version of Vision. Again, from an acting, the acting is what really grabbed me in this episode the most, was that we go back to an earlier, you can see even the understanding that Vision has about life and humanity. It's very much an infantile emotional intelligence at that point. And I liked the simplicity of what he says to her. You know, I've always been alone. That entire series where he discusses that with her, I thought was just such a wonderful sequence and a wonderful scene, because it reminds us of who Vision was before falling in love with Wanda and before gaining his, dare we say, humanity through the emotional relationship that he has with her. And it really, again, just reinforced how strong their love is and how real their love is, and that bond, which has grown since this scene into that end moment where he's gone, and those two things being back to back almost, like, it really just hit home for me. It was awesome. It was awesome. I was choking up a little bit.
How about you, Mark?
I mean, Agatha even, and somebody else mentioned it, but I looked at it and I said, even Agatha wiped away a tear. That wasn't That wasn't fake. It's not like
you think, you think it was real? I experienced it fake the first time, but I've experienced it real ever since.
Well, here's the thing. Wanda's not looking at her, and it's not like she's breaking the fourth wall looking at the camera going, you know, like she.
Yeah, I agree with you. Nice call, dude. Mm-hmm.
And I love moments that could be something out of a play. You know, you don't need big scenes, big props, just focused on two people sitting on a bed, just having an innocent conversation about why a outside patio roof falling on a man is funny. You know, like it was just such a cute, heartfelt moment. Her rebuilding, him trying to be more human. And they just have that moment where Wanda kind of gets lost into Vision's eyes. And you see him actually like have that moment of I'm feeling something. And he smiles. He does like that dorky, like high school, teenage John Hughes boy smile of, oh my God, the girl, like I made her smile. I made her laugh. And then they go back to watching the TV and they're having that cute dorky conversation. I think this scene made that relationship. It was already one of my, I don't want to say one of my favorite MCU relationships, but it definitely, it raised it up there as to me having Wanda and Vision up there as far as MCU couples goes.
Ethan, how about you? It's a newer relationship to you.
It definitely is, but it felt like something that I, you know, I think that we've all probably been a part of at some point where, you know, we find the new love interest or we find someone that we're interested in. And, you know, we just simply want to have that conversation that leads to a giggle or a laugh or just something that says, hey, I kind of like you too. And, you know, I think that Mark hit it on the head really well. Both Marks hit it both just really, really well. And I think for me, what I saw was Wanda realizing how intelligent Vision was, but also how much he cared about her enough to just sit with her and listen. And, you know, the quote, Brian, and you already said it, but the quote that he says during this scene is almost a great way to explain grief to anyone. It's just love persevering. And I think it's something that people will use, and it should be used to explain what grief is, because it really, there's different stages of grief. And unfortunately with Wanda, we've seen her develop, you know, continually develop grief and how upsetting it can be. And, you know, I think what really is interesting about that is when you start to peel away all the layers, it's really just love. And when that love disappears or is no longer there, it's very sad, but it's still love. And that to me really stood out about this scene. And it didn't necessarily tug at my heartstrings like up until now when we're talking about it and thinking about it, but I still really enjoyed the first scene with the kids and the family. But this one was just sort of a testament of how a relationship sort of starts and how it can kind of grow and flourish into something that is just very lovely.
Yep.
Can I say, when I watched Wanda and Vision in Infinity War, their romance felt to me like, okay, they're a very serious couple on a European vacation. And I felt it was slightly rushed, or, okay, we're just supposed to expect like somehow they got to this point. But I think that scene gave me more to believe. It planted a stronger seed for the romance for me.
Yep. Yep. And we get a callback to that too from Infinity War later on.
I felt that when you, I agree that when you see them together, you know, and they're in, I think it was Scotland. I'm sorry if I'm, they're in Scotland. And we see them together. They're a full-blown couple now. We haven't seen them together in quite some time. They've gone off the grid together. It felt somewhat empty that, you know, even the moment where, you know, she does kill him and he says, it's okay, all I feel is you. The power of that moment was not quite there as it is now. So I'll go back and watch that sequence after having watched WandaVision. It's augmented their relationship so much so. But this scene, tenfold, because you, like Ethan said, you get to see the budding romance. You get to see the beginning of that love and how it begins with him getting her through the grief and how important he has been to her in her life. That she was in shock and in grief of having now lost the only person left in her life. She lost both of her parents, and her brother, who was the only other constant in her life, is now gone. And she even says, I was in a new place, in a new country, in a new land. I didn't know anyone. I was a stranger. And then again, watching the television, which was the only thing probably giving her comfort. It was the only familiar in a world full of change. And then here comes Vision to kind of give her this, call it a moment of clarity, if you will, about the loss and the grief that she's feeling. And he really tries to help her make sense and process that grief. And then I found, especially now, it was more powerful. Now the one person who has helped her process grief in her life, the person that she has learned to love, the only true thing that she has then gets taken away from her. She never processed it because she was blipped. She's brought back, sees him in pieces,
right,
and now cannot feel him at all. And then to have to open that deed to the house. And that scene for me was just so powerful, where she, it was almost like the power came from like inside. It was like ripping her heart out. That's how I kind of read that scene, was that was her feeling every inch of loss in her life all at once in one moment.
Go ahead. Right.
Rob's making a beautiful point here. The way that I've been able to experience the MCU is I get little pieces of information, and as I go further into the universe, as I get further into these relationships, and it's not just love relationships, it's relationships between Tony and Captain America, and it allows you to put the pieces together without seeing everything in the same piece. You've got to be a part of the other pieces of the story in order to get the complete view. And it's a piece of writing that isn't normally done. It's not something that you see anywhere else. And it really is. It's absolutely astonishing how a writer can take a minuscule piece of information and make it important in something else. I think that's so cool. And so beautifully well done. Go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm with you. Like, and Frankie, you even just said it. I'm with you. I wasn't really too invested in Wanda and Vision's relationship. You're good. I wasn't too invested. And now after watching this episode, I had an honest thought where I was like, oh man, I wanted a TV series about this, about Wanda and Vision's relationship right here.
Yeah.
Oh wait, this is the only show, and this is it. Oh wow, man. All right. So,
go back and watch Captain America: Civil War. The scene where he's making her paprikash, and she just he's going out there emotionally to do something nice for somebody.
Yeah.
And that comes after this conversation. I'm sure it does. And it's just, you can see it in his, every fiber of his being. He wants to make her happy and let her go to the grocery store, but Tony Stark won't let him. I mean,
can I get a hot take really quick too? And I'm sorry if I'm going to offend. This is what drove me crazy with the Martin Scorsese comments. Listen, this is what drove me with the Martin Scorsese attitude of Marvel shows are just these tentpole circus, theme park things. Martin, not to offend your overly sensitive nature, but these films are doing a lot more than The Irishman did for me, my friend. Yeah. Like,
yep.
I saw nothing in your latest bloated epic that would convince me that the product that you have been putting out for the last 15 to 20 years will top this on an emotional level and the way that it will connect with the greater people. I find that there is an elitism
yep.
when it comes to writing and Hollywood that people will poo-poo the type of stuff that's happening in these shows and in these movies, and they will write them off and say, because they contain action sequences and because a three-year-old can appreciate it just like a 30-year-old, that yep. it can't be good. To them, I present this show and say, you're full of malarkey. You're wrong.
Ooh, strong words.
These shows are some of the best stuff that you're getting right now. And if you can't see it, then you're an elitist. Yeah. And you really need to check yourself. Just because it's not an art house film doesn't mean there's not great writing and great right. acting going on. That scene and that sequence was proof positive that what is happening right now in the MCU, and dare I say, what's been happening in the MCU, is some of the best stuff that Hollywood is putting out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sorry that people can't get behind an art house film unless they have the Academy, or, you know, they have groups of the gatekeepers telling you, like this, not this. You can't dictate to people what good acting and what good film is. Just because you brand it. So
Mark, I would love to double down on this with you and say, people walk around from The Irishman. First off, it took me 3 tries to finish it because it felt recycled Martin Scorsese, and it didn't bring me really any emotional connection to the characters. I felt the writing was just very formulated from previous works of his. I'll even go as far as say that's my issue with The Joker. When I first watched The Joker, I was blown away, but then as I thought about it, I didn't really walk away with too much. What the MCU is doing, they're telling stories in a different way now. Everything has changed, and they have changed how everything is done. And they're showing you, just like if we go back and remember in Spider-Man 2, there's a scene where Tobey Maguire and Aunt May are having a heartfelt moment. I remember going, oh my God, this is a summer blockbuster, and they're having a cute moment. And then this show now, after we had big explosions, big special effects, we're having two people sit on a bed and just have a pure moment about discovering emotions, discovering love. And if Martin Scorsese, who I respect your films, Casino, Goodfellas, The Departed, yeah. I get it. You have done wonderful things. Mm-hmm. But to dismiss it for someone who fights for films that have changed cinema, you're contradicting yourself by belittling films that are changing cinema, that mm-hmm. are bringing new imagination to storytellers out there. People are wanting to write new stories based on mm-hmm. things they're learning. They want to go to the movies more. Marty, you want to, I'm calling you Marty. You want people to go to the movies, to come back to
demean him, go for it.
This is getting people to go to the movies. I'm sorry. If I would have seen The Irishman in theaters, I would have been like, oh, look, it's the, I'm glad I watched it at home. Like I
said, listen, that's it, dude. Preach. These movies, these tentpole films, these carnivals, if you will, are what are keeping cinemas open and alive. There is a reason that people will go in droves to see these movies. It's because they are entertaining, they're enjoyable, they hit home. I again, you know, James just put it up there as a joke a second ago about Mark's soapbox. This is 100% the biggest soapbox that I have about the entertainment industry, that I am sick of the gatekeepers telling us what is good right. and what should be watched. Watch this, not that. You know, watch this movie, which has 42 lines of dialogue throughout the entire movie. I'm sorry, The Revenant, I'm looking at you. You know, don't tell me that The Revenant is a great movie because it's got, you know, dozens of lines. And a movie like this is terrible because, you know, it's right. just filled with explosions and action sequences. Good writing is good writing.
This show is
good writing.
That's just it. I think people forget that The Wizard of Oz, that wasn't meant to be some big classic movie. Jaws, that was the first summer blockbuster and people were like, oh, wait, this is actually a well-written movie that was supposed to just be a summer blockbuster.
Who directed Star that Wars, movie? I forgot.
The Steven Spielberg, Oscar winner, should have been, anyways, more. Star Wars, you had a guy in a teddy bear costume on Star Wars spaceships. Like, nobody took it seriously. And then the Academy was like, wait a minute, this changed cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, who, like, not every film is going to be The Godfather. Not every film is going to be Schindler's List. But just as The Godfather and Schindler's List changed cinema, the Avengers have changed cinema.
And let's also mention that these studios are willing to take a chance on those smaller films because they're raking it in with films like this.
Yes.
And they'll take losses on those films because they can recoup recoup the box office or any losses that they take from the box offices on films that are higher risk.
Yep.
These films allow those filmmakers to play around in the sandbox. If not, these studios would shut them down completely.
Yep. You
don't get me started.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's move on.
We're gonna need a bigger show.
Yeah. Agatha says parents dead, brother dead, Vision dead. What could you do when he wasn't there to bring you back from the dark? She goes into the SWORD headquarters and we get kind of what we thought was coming. She goes stomping in there, and then all of a sudden, the next thing we know, she's standing at the security desk with Mr. Gatekeeping Doorman. And she is waiting patiently for her chance to talk to, as he introduces himself, Director Hayward, not acting Director Hayward, because he's a tool. He manipulated Wanda perfectly for what he wanted from this scene. He said, not everybody has the power to bring someone they love back online, forgive me, back to life. He knows exactly what he's doing. He wants her to go down there to see if what she's going to do is actually what's going to bring him back to life. When she puts his hand to, when she puts her hand to his head, a lot of Vision does light up. But every time I've watched it since, the pieces of Vision that are lit up when she does her power are already lit up ahead of time. So I don't know if Hayward actually got what he wanted from here. Before we move on, she puts her hand on his head, calls back to that scene in Infinity War, which makes that Scotland scene so much more powerful now. And she says, I just feel you. She says, I can't feel you. She knows Vision's gone. And he's gone forever to what she thinks. And she leaves the building without that body. I don't know why I took Hayward's word for it that she took that body. I was dumbfounded that she left the building without that body. Ethan, there's a lot in this sword sequence. What happened there?
And you hit it. That to me was what really stuck out. Was I can recall in the beginning episodes that Hayward said, oh, we got to fear Wanda. Wanda was the one who grabbed Vision and brought him into the Hex. And that when this came up, this is where all the questions started coming. I'm like, wait a second. Hayward showed us that Wanda took it. Wanda didn't take it, but we're following Vision in the Hex, but it's not really Vision. This whole scene was very, very, very confusing. And I think also on top of that, I'll have to go back and rewatch now a couple times, because it just seemed like the person that Hayward portrayed to the team at SWORD, in terms of what Wanda was capable of and that she is a threat, and it just didn't seem to me like, yeah, she opened the door in a kind of a snap because she had been held up. But other than that, she didn't seem to me, and she, you know, she broke the glass and got down there, but she didn't seem to me like that big of a threat as it, compared to what Hayward described her as to the rest of the team. And it's just very interesting.
We've learned she can turn the guns on somebody she wants to, and she doesn't at this point. Like, she goes down there and she, I think, realizes what she's done.
Yeah.
Wanda did everything right. Like, I mean, she shouldn't have broken the glass, but Wanda did everything right. Mark, from this Diz Life, what do you think?
You know, I'm gonna defer on this one. Okay. I did not have any real thoughts except for the two things that you already said. So just the I can't feel you, and then the shock that she did not take the body in that moment. And I'm gonna see even defer for the end when we talk about White Vision.
Okay.
Because I think that's where I want to go with this more so than in that moment.
How about you, Mark?
I had a question for the nerds out there. Now, they used vibranium to make Vision, and yet they're cutting him up pretty well. So what exactly, how much of Vision is vibranium?
I mean, vibranium's quite, what's the word I'm looking, versatile, as you can see in Black Panther. Vibranium can pretty much do anything you want to, and then you combine that with the tissue making that Dr. Helen Cho can do within Avengers Age of Ultron. $3 billion worth of vibranium can do quite a bit. But I would just say don't think too much about it. The vibranium is a very versatile metal.
Okay.
But when you see him getting literally ripped apart, it's brutal. Like, it's just brutal, all of it. Hayward absolutely edited the video. There's no question. It's not edited, maybe, but it's just cut off at the proper point. Hayward, he goaded her, saying he's not yours to take, like, everything. Wanda walks outside without, I mean, Hayward, he's not Mephisto. Like, everybody stop. Like, Mephisto's not in this show. Like, we've all said it too, but he's the more information we get, the more information we get, we need to take what information's being given to us. That's just what we need to do. We only have about an hour left of this show. We need to take what it's been given, and we just need to let go of our theories. The theories are fun. We need to not be married to our theories.
Yep.
We get our Buick commercial. There's a letter. The deed is on the car seat. A lot of people experience this, that the deed was placed in there without her knowledge. That's not what happened. It was very much in the car. She was going to take Vision's body, like she asked. She wanted to bury that body at 2800 Sherwood Drive in Westview, New Jersey. That's what she wanted to do. She was going to bury his body in the place that he bought, that they could grow old in. That's what was going to happen. And she goes there anyway, and she doesn't have her body. She doesn't have that person to talk her back, and she loses control. And we see that. Go ahead, Ethan.
So it took me a few minutes, and I think, you know, for maybe the average fan, but it took me a few minutes to realize that when she's pulling into Westview, we are after Endgame. We are coming into still an area that's still very
New Jersey.
You know, well, yes,
I had to. Also, I'm sorry,
but still, like, very desolate. There's not a whole lot of, like, life there. They're starting to rebuild. They're starting to come back. They're starting to, you know, sort of find their feet, if you will. So it took me a minute to say, like, all right, well, how come it's so run down? Like, what's really going on here? But then I had to remember, you know, everything else that was sort of playing into that.
Remember Scott Lang in San Francisco, like, during that 5 years later. Like, San Francisco's awful. Said it's only been a week since Avengers Endgame, so they're really building up. Phil Jones is going to teach piano lessons on his grandmother's piano. It was so good to see that mustache back. I need more of that. But so she creates this entire thing, and this is what freaks Agatha out, is it's all physical. The kids are real. Vision is real. Vision was being tracked by Hayward through a decaying vibranium signature. Wanda created vibranium. Mm-hmm. Wanda is extremely, extremely powerful. And this is where Agatha freaks out. And a lot of people are pointing out the end when Wanda finds herself on that soundstage with the lights and the studio audience, all that kind of stuff. People saying, why didn't Vision see that? I don't think that that's how Wanda or Vision saw this 50s sitcom Dick Van Dyke show. I think it's now what Wanda's seeing. It's not the same that she saw back then. So it's just, I know we're skipping quite a bit, but I know we're running a little bit long. Thank you for everybody for sticking with us. We hope you're having a good time. But she creates Vision. We get it comes, and Sebastian called it out earlier. We get that yellow energy, something from that, the Mind Stone that she can harness. I think does create him. I don't think the Mind Stone is real, but it's powerful. She steps into the sitcom, but then we get Agatha in her full blown, freaked out, claps to Wanda saying, now I know you are even more powerful than I realized. You didn't even take his body. She thought Vision was Vision, and he's not. He's created by Wanda. The kids have been created by Wanda, and she hammers that home when she says, ah, yes, your children, Vision, this entire world that you have created. We get Agatha in her full witch glory, and she looked awesome. And she calls out chaos magic. Mark, what is chaos magic?
All right, so chaos magic, so in the comics, Again, I realize, ladies and gentlemen, that the MCU is not going to, it's not going to give us Chaos Magic as it comes from the comics, but it stems from the ancient god of chaos, which is why I'm sitting here and I've said like the word Chthon a million times. So this entity, this god of chaos in the books is known as Chthon. Whoever wields chaos magic can reshape reality itself. So it's incredibly powerful. It's deeply unstable and very unpredictable. It has the power to create, and then ultimately it has the power to destroy or even open up different portals or create a multiverse. We know where this show is going. We know that it is going to lead into the multiverse of madness. So you've had a lot of speculation all over that people have now shifted from it being Mephisto to being Chthon.
Including you.
Including myself. Brian, who's in the comments for Mouse Ears and Magic, happens to agree with me on that one. I know that the two of us have talked about Chthon. But it allows us to kind of connect to the greater narrative, which, again, I think that this show, one, it's established a lot of stuff on its own. We've been talking about it for the last hour and 32 minutes for a reason, but this show is probably going to be a one-off, and it is there to set up the greater narrative of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And I think that that's ultimately what's going to happen. We're going to see the Scarlet Witch in all of her power. We're going to see her now come to actualize the power that she has been wielding unknowingly now for a while. In some regard, Agatha has been a tutor for her of sorts. I know that she does tutor her in the books, and she runs borderline of villain and also a mentor for the Scarlet Witch. So in that regard, we did get that through this sequence. We did get her mentoring the Scarlet Witch to make her actualize what she has and the power that she really has. And I think at the end of all of this, we're going to get Chthon. I think we're going to get connected to the dark dimension. I think if I had to make a prediction, that's what Agatha's goal has been all along. She wants to bring about Chthon to increase and enhance her power and pull out the power from the dark dimension. I have not been looking at the comments because I've been deep in chaos magic right now. That's my take. Go ahead.
Can I make a prediction about the next episode?
Yeah.
Everyone is going to be disappointed. They're going to bring up how there was not some big character brought on like they thought there was going to be.
Nothing with
Fantastic Four or X-Men is going to be brought up. People are not going to be satisfied because they got themselves carried away in theories and conspiracy theories and all that. And I think they're going to take a break from it, and the next Marvel movie or Doctor Strange is going to come out, and they're like, I'm going to need to watch WandaVision.
Exactly.
They're going to go back, and they're going to actually enjoy it and go, man, I wish I would have just turned off and just had a fun ride instead of trying to thank the Phoenicians the whole time.
Mark,
for me, says keep the expectations low. Shoot the expectations up for a good episode, but don't shoot them up for Mutants or Fantastic Four.
But listen, that's what Marvel does best. They always, every single Marvel film leaves you wanting more. That's what this episode and this series is going to do. It's going to leave you wanting more so that the next time that we see this story arc in Doctor Strange, people will not be able to stay away from the theaters, COVID or not. They're going to want to see it.
And you'll be back in 2 weeks for Falcon and Winter Soldier. Ethan, what do you think?
I'll be honest. I'm sort of excited about the fact that if this is going to play into another film, my wife's going to want to see it. That's exciting.
What it's all about, man.
That to me is exciting. The fact that Jen's gotten into this and there's going to be a movie that sort of shows what's going to, like, maybe the highest of high or the lowest of low moments going into Doctor Strange for Wanda. That's exciting to me. We get to go to the movies, we get to have a date night and sort of play out the rest of the film.
Well, Ethan, that's what I get with Thor. Whenever Thor's on the screen, my wife's like, "Who's in this?" I'm like, "Chris Helmsworth." She's like, "We're going."
James, can you bring back Coach DeFranco's comment? I've been waiting to get to this all night. People are going to be disappointed with the actor Paul Bettany has been wanting to work with Theory. Oh boy, I am not disappointed in this at all. If you've been tuning in to Marvel Monday, you know that I thought it was Simon Williams and that it was going to be some big time actor, that we were going to get Eric Williams, his brother, the Grim Reaper. We're not getting any of that. But here is the direct quote from Paul Bettany. "There is one character that has not been revealed, and it is very exciting. It's an actor that I've longed to work with my entire life. We have some amazing scenes together, and the chemistry between us is, I think, extraordinary. And it is just fireworks on the set. I'm really excited for people to see that stuff." Paul Bettany was talking about himself the entire time. Yeah. Paul Bettany is going to share a scene, Parent Trap style, and he's going to be on the scene saying he's wanted to work with himself the entire time, and that is the most amazing troll job that any single actor has ever pulled in the MCU, and I cannot wait for that to be the case, because we thought Paul Bettany was good in this series. Wait till we're seeing him talk to himself.
That's cool.
He will be playing himself.
He's Emmy-worthy after that.
Could be.
It's so yes, we did get a question earlier. Is Paul Bettany White Vision? Absolutely. There's theories that James Spader's voice is going to show up as Ultron. I think it's going to be more powerful if it's Vision talking to Vision. We could get something Ultron. I really don't know. But I think it's going to be Vision talking to Vision, and I cannot wait for it. One thing we didn't talk about is we saw her parents. They weren't the couple from the commercial. That surprised me. I really thought it would be the case, but I think, and somebody pointed this out to me, that said if it was that couple, I think it would have taken away from the emotion of the moment, because you would have been like, yes, I got that one right.
Yes.
And I think the scene was more emotional without those people being her parents. Yeah. White Vision, Mark, you said you had thoughts on White Vision. Thank you for staying there with us, guys. We're trying to wrap up.
So the sequence where we're seeing her in that moment, and she says, I can't feel you. And you know, the whole time we've been expecting that she's taken this body. What I got from that scene and from that sequence is that the only thing that she wants to take now from this is the love and the emotion. And I think that it's really funny that everyone thinks that, you know, that White Vision is going to come back, and, that there's going to be any semblance of Vision in that. Again, I'm going to be proven wrong, 'cause I keep talking about the books, but White Vision is notorious emotion. He's emotionless. So in that scene, the one thing that I snickered at is we see her dealing with loss right then and there. I think that White Vision is going to be the second time that she's going to have to deal with that loss again. She's either going to have to
third time. She's already seen him die twice.
She's going to have to destroy that corpse, or she's going to have to deal with the vision that she has created in her reality being gone, because the hex falls. And then being dealt with the literal loss of the love and everything that she has come to know, because what will only be left at that point is just a synthesoid, a shell with no memories, with no vision left in it, no mind stone. And she's going to have to deal with a completely different level of loss. And that's where I'm going to be curious as to where it's going to go at that point.
So White Vision does have the memories. He remembers who people are. He recognizes Wanda. He just doesn't love her. He doesn't have emotion.
He does have
the memories of Vision. Sorry to interrupt.
Thank you. No, thank you. That's what I meant. I probably just didn't say.
No, you're good.
Yeah. Are we also kind of seeing how vital Tony and Steve were to the Avengers and just keeping everyone?
Yeah, James, bring up that pick.
I don't want to say in check, but do we think White Vision would have happened if Tony or Captain America were still around?
I do, because I think S.W.O.R.D. had rightful claim to his body because of the Sokovia Accords, and
I'm not arguing that, but you think they would have allowed a White Vision to be created?
I don't think anybody knows it was created.
I don't think anybody knows. Yeah,
people.
True.
To go back to what Brian said last week when Monica
James,
is,
can you bring up that picture of White Vision for us?
When Monica is to get the vehicle, so cool. That the line where she says, "There are some of us, we're not just loyal to your mother. There are some people that do not go along with Hayward's plan." I think that this is I think that he's kind of going rogue here, that he's making an executive decision to create this sentient weapon. I don't think everyone at S.W.O.R.D. goes along with it. A lot of people have thrown in Skrulls into the mix to saying that the people that are not with Hayward are Skrulls. I'm kind of done speculating in some regards, and in others, I will say I think I know what's going on, but here's an avenue where I think I'm just going to enjoy whatever happens.
Wanda's had a hard life, man. If we have to watch Vision look at her in the eye and say, "I know you, but I don't love you," that's going to be rough. That's going to be rough, man. That's going to be really hard. So I don't know. I'm hopeful the fact that White Vision exists, that we can get some sort of merging of personalities and that we can get Vision to live in some form. I don't know if we're going to be able to get him back the way we had him. Ethan, how did you experience White Vision? You never even knew he was a thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, we had talked about it briefly here. It was a speculation at one point, and I don't know. I didn't necessarily think anything bad about it. I most certainly thought that it was an interesting sight because I think that it certainly is. It's very awe-awing, you know. His deep blue eyes, things of that nature, are very prominent. But I didn't, and I don't know what to expect from him yet. I didn't get enough of an indicator as to what he's really going to be like, or what he's going to do, or what, you know. I know he's working for the other side, essentially, if we're putting sides on things. But in terms of the overall feel and aspect of him, I just don't have a great take on it right now.
Sounds good. Going into the finale, guys, one small thing you want or one thing you want to see, Vision versus Vision for me, but I also want the answer of who Pietro is. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
Mark, Diz Life, Mark, anything you're looking for?
Marky Mark kind of said this, that I'm just along for the ride now. I don't want to speculate. It would be cool if we get an introduction of Doctor Strange, where we get a larger narrative here. I'm hoping for a real strong connection to the next movie so that I can buy a tub of popcorn and go see Doctor Strange. That's about it.
Stick around for the post-credit scene. That's all I'll say. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us here on Marvel Monday, an extra long edition. We might have to talk. Keep your eyes peeled to the Diz Life group. Keep your eyes peeled to YouTube. We might have to move up even just a little bit, half an hour maybe next week, so we can get a little extra time in for the finale. But we'll see how everybody can do that. But thank you so much for joining us on Marvel Monday. For United We Fan, I'm Brian, and Marky Mark down there in the corner, Ethan, the Wolf of Main Street down there, and Mark at This Diz Life. Excelsior, everybody, for the children.
For the children.
For the children.